Chapter 20. Ilsa sat in a cafe, sipping water and looking out over the bay. Carlos sat across from her, looking none too happy. Carlos scowled at Mr. Portman and Mr. Blake, who sat across the patio from them. They each held a newspaper and pretended to read it, but most of their attention stayed on the ship that had docked a few hours ago and was still in the process of offloading cargo. Carlos kept his voice down. "The Americans are too obvious. They stick out like lame donkeys." Ilsa glanced at them. They looked out of place, but the Panama Canal Zone had become an international zone, and Caucasians certainly weren't an anomaly. She looked at the other patrons. None of them looked suspicious to her. The Nazis would have noticed their two henchmen missing by now and might have sent other men to fill in the gaps. Or women, she thought. She glanced at the few women on the patio. Some looked young enough, but none struck her as operatives. She leaned across the table slightly and looked over the rim of her sunglasses at Carlos. "No one followed us here. Quit being so paranoid." Carlos huffed. "That's easy for you to say. My family won't eat this month if this doesn't work out." Ilsa sighed and said, "I wish you could see beyond the money, Carlos. Aren't you happy to be helping?"
"Pshaw! If you thought that, you wouldn't be collecting."
Ilsa tried not to let the comment grate on her, but it did.
"You know as well as I do that none of this would be possible without the money. I take just enough to live off, which isn't much here. After your portion, you know where the rest goes."
"Soon we'll have to pay the damn gringos too, I suppose," Carlos seethed.
She glanced toward Portman again.
"I don't trust Portman, but the others seem okay. I doubt they'll take a single Balboa.
After what they did to President Arias, I don't trust any of them."
Ilsa and Carlos had gone round and round this issue countless times. A few years before, the fascist-leaning President Arias had been deemed a threat by the United States. They had encouraged a coup to replace him with someone more aligned with their values. Someone who would keep the Panama Canal open and safe from attack. An ally. Eventually, Arias lost his job and was replaced by President de la Guardia, a man much more friendly to the Americans. Soon after, the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, and Panama declared war on the Axis powers, fully aligning with the Allies. Carlos didn't trust de la Guardia because he didn't think Panamanians had chosen him. The United States had. He didn't agree with President Arias's politics, but he considered him legitimately elected. Ilsa thought his whole point moot, however. The Allies would never have allowed the vital Panama Canal Zone to fall into the hands of an Axis-leaning regime. She thought the U.S. had showed considerable restraint, citing the days when most Panamanians believed an American invasion imminent. Instead, they'd helped facilitate a bloodless coup. Ilsa said,
"You'll have to trust someone at some point, Carlos. The Americans seem like a good sort. A little naive, but they'll learn."
"I'd sooner trust a dog not to eat raw meat."
Ilsa checked her watch. "They're done offloading the ship. They're ahead of schedule." Carlos glanced toward the ship, but didn't let his gaze linger.
"I told our esteemed mayor 7 p.m.
Ilsa nodded.
"Yes, we'll keep to the schedule. Don't want the port authority around. You still trust him?"
"Mayor Gutches? Yes, but only as long as we're paying him more than the Nazis or the Nationalists or the Communists, Bolsheviks, Italians."
He marked them off on his fingers, making his point.
"Really, the hard part's over. We've got it easy on this side."
Carlos's eyes softened, and he said,
"Your cousin must have large cojones to do what he does."
Ilsa thought of her cousin, Melike. Carlos assumed her cousin was male, and she hadn't corrected him. The less everyone knew, the better. Out of all her relatives in Germany, Melike seemed to be the only one who saw the Nazis for what they were. Evil.
"Yes, he's in constant danger," she agreed.
Private First Class Cooper watched Ilsa and Carlos stroll toward the relatively quiet docks. Powerful lights lit the docks but cast long shadows in the corners. No dock workers remained. To Sean, Ilsa and Carlos looked like a couple on a stroll. He thought about his relationship with her. Was it really over? Everything had happened so fast. He'd barely had a moment to speak with her before they split them up and shunted her off to parts unknown for interrogation, he supposed. Probably only a door down from where he'd been. The thought of her being hurt grated on him every moment. Despite his own troubles, he couldn't stop worrying about her. Sean didn't like or trust Mr. Portman. He'd never heard his first name and didn't know who he worked for. He wasn't military, at least no service branch Sean had ever heard of. He hadn't seen him since leaving the building and reporting to Captain Johnson. That meeting hadn't gone well. Besides being as angry as a hornet, Johnson didn't really seem to know what to do with him. After an epic ass-chewing, he'd been placed under house arrest and ordered not to leave the barracks for any reason. Half a day later, Lieutenant Hennessy told him to report to Captain Johnson again. He fully expected to be kicked out of not only the airborne but the army, too. Instead, Johnson told him he'd be accompanying him on a sensitive mission. And now, here he sat, looking over the docks, watching Ilsa and Carlos. He wondered, for the 100th time, why Captain Johnson had insisted on Sean being there. He thought Lieutenant Hennessy would blow a gasket. He had glared at him as though he had pulled a fast one on him somehow. Sean could only shrug. He didn't want to be there. He'd much rather have rejoined his unit and gotten on with his life. He felt lucky to still have the paratrooper wings on his chest. He wondered what his buddies from the company thought about his absence. He grinned, thinking of all the scuttlebutt there'd be about his sudden disappearance. Although an elite fighting unit, the paratroopers could be as gossipy as school-aged girls if the occasion arose. Captain Johnson handed him the binoculars. "You want a closer look?" Sean took them and adjusted the focus. He glassed Ilsa and saw her exposed calves. Despite himself, he couldn't help feeling flushed with the memory of stroking those supple calves. He doubted he'd ever get another chance, and he felt a wave of regret. He scanned ahead of her until he found the shack where there'd normally be a few security guards. Even from here, he could tell it was abandoned. "Looks deserted out there," he noted. He scanned to the far left, searching for Blake. He sat across the pier from Portman, in the shadows on the east side, but he couldn't see him. He handed the binoculars back, and Johnson put the strap over his head and studied the area again. "I don't see anyone either." He scanned right, stopped suddenly, and leaned forward slightly. "Wait, who's that?" Sean's heart rate increased as he tried to see what Johnson had. "Where? I don't see anyone." Johnson pointed far right. "Two of them, about 70 yards from our people." Sean looked where he pointed. Without the aid of the binoculars, he saw them merely as dark shapes. "Are they moving toward Ilsa?" he asked, unable to keep the concern and worry from his voice. Johnson dropped his eyes from the binoculars and glared at Sean, then went back to the binoculars. "You still have feelings for her," he stated flatly. "Get over it. If she's telling us the truth, she's an asset now." Annoyed, Sean pressed, "Are they moving toward her or not, sir?" He knew he sounded way out of line, but he needed to know. If Ilsa was in danger, he couldn't just sit there doing nothing. Johnson ignored his question, then said, "Get on the radio. Inform Portman he's got company." "Shouldn't we go down there and intercept them? What about the squad?" he asked, desperation seeping into his voice. "Follow orders, Private," Johnson barked. "Yes, sir," Sean answered automatically. Portman picked up immediately. Sean felt his skin crawl, remembering what the son of a bitch had done to him. He looked into the darkness along the right side of the docks, knowing Portman's approximate position but not able to see him. "Two people moving up from the west, about 70 yards back. Over." The walkie-talkie clicked, and Portman answered, "Roger, I've got them. Weapons? Over." Sean turned to Johnson. "He sees them but wants to know if you see weapons." "No, but they could easily be hiding pistols. Ask if he wants me to send the squad forward." Sean relayed the info and asked the question. The terse reply came quickly, "Not yet." Sean relayed that and held the radio, straining to keep tabs on everything. He could still see Ilsa and Carlos moving steadily toward the guardhouse and the moored ship beyond, but he could barely see the other two closing on them from behind, and Portman and Blake not at all. "What will Portman do?" Johnson kept the binoculars pressed to his eyes and talked from the side of his mouth. Nothing unless they try to interfere.
What if they do? Will he kill them?
Johnson's voice went lower. I don't rightly know.
This is crazy. What are we doing here?
Johnson lowered the binoculars and looked at him sternly.
What do you mean? We're seeing if your girlfriend is telling the truth or not.
He put the binoculars back to his eyes and found the two mystery men again.
You started this whole thing. You want out?
I don't even know what I'm in, sir.
Johnson ignored him, and Sean asked,
Portman won't be able to handle both of them, will he?
I suppose you want to go down there and help him?
Sean put the walkie-talkie down, intending to do just that, but Johnson said,
Not gonna happen, Private. Stay on the radio.
Yes, sir,
Sean muttered miserably.
Ilsa walked slowly beside Carlos, acting as though she didn't have a care in the world. She wore a summery, loose-fitting dress, and the breeze coming off the pier pressed it against the swathes of packaging she had strapped across her waist and stomach. She thought they must look like an odd couple, she a foreigner and he a local man nearly a foot shorter than her. With a strong military presence throughout the Panama Canal Zone, she hoped they wouldn't seem too out of the ordinary. Just an oddly matched couple on a stroll. She studied the upcoming guard shack and didn't see any sign of the guards.
Seems Miaguchas has kept his word.
Yes, so far,
Carlos muttered skeptically.
She lifted her gaze to the hulking ship's hull beyond the guard shack. The rusted sides rose like a skyscraper straight out of the sea. She saw the narrow gangway still in place leading from the belly of the ship to the dock. She wondered what the human cargo awaiting her arrival thought of the situation. They'd be in utter darkness by now, anxiously waiting to hear the correct knocking sequence from her. She'd done this 3 other times already, and each time their petrified faces turning to joy in an instant brought tears to her eyes. The children made an even bigger impact.
Don't get soft now, she chided herself.
She stopped and knelt to adjust her shoe. Carlos stopped and turned to face her, knowing she wanted him to check their tail. He scanned the area from beneath the brim of his hat. After a few seconds, she used his hand to stand, and they continued strolling.
Carlos said, We've picked up a tail. 2 of them.
I had a feeling. What's Mr. Portman doing?
I didn't see him, but doubt he could miss them. How do you want to proceed?
We'll see what happens this time.
Carlos harrumphed, but didn't protest. Ilsa thought about the last time this had happened. That time, she ducked into the empty guardhouse and let them come to her. She'd gotten the drop on the 2 Nazi vermin. She'd given them the chance to surrender, but they'd lunged, and she'd been forced to kill them with her Mauser pistol. Carlos wanted to drop them into the sea with rocks attached, but she knew they'd be found. So they'd hidden them and come back for them with a borrowed truck and shovels. They approached the gangway leading to the ship. She stopped and faced Carlos, looking back the way they'd come. She hugged him, just another amorous couple. As she stroked his back, she searched for and found the 2 followers. She supposed they weren't fooling anyone by now.
I wonder how they keep finding us.
Carlos laughed.
You do tend to stand out.
She giggled, adding to the farce.
I suppose you're right.
She tried to keep a low profile all the time, but her height and European features stood out no matter how dark her skin became beneath the Panamanian sun.
They've ducked into the shadows. We'll let our American friends take care of them.
Carlos made a remark she didn't catch, but it didn't sound supportive. She released Carlos and turned back to the ship. She saw a figure standing in the hull opening. She waved and raised her voice.
Ah, there you are, Captain. May we come aboard?
He waved and raised his voice.
Permission granted. Did you bring the tamales?
Ilsa nearly choked, but her training took over and she answered immediately.
Of course. I've got them right here. How many would you like?
Carlos let her go first, and they strode up the single-file gangway. Carlos pulled out the pistol he had tucked into his waistband. She heard the click of the hammer being pulled back. He murmured, I'm ready. The ship's captain answered her with a hint of strain in his voice.
I'm hungry. I'd love four if you have them.
Her blood froze in her veins, but she answered with a lilt of laughter in her voice.
Of course, four it is.
She kept smiling, but lowered her voice to a whisper so only Carlos could hear.
Two, possibly three of them.
See, he said, and she heard the malice in his voice. She'd seen Carlos do brutal things, but she'd never seen him kill anyone. He hadn't been trained like her. Killing someone at close range was vastly different than beating someone up. She didn't know if he'd be able to do it. She reached her hand back and said,
Give me the gun.
She heard his breath catch in his throat, and she pressed,
Now!
She felt the cold weight of the pistol.
When I say go, pull the captain onto the gangway.
They were nearly at the top now.
Understand?
She whispered and kept smiling and waving.
See,
Carlos finally murmured. Ilsa beamed as she walked the last few feet.
So nice to see you again, Jose.
She couldn't see anyone else, but knew they'd likely be on either side of the hatch, guns drawn and ready. She hoped they hadn't made the captain show them the cargo. The gangway ran into a small deck, which fanned out a few feet to either side. Ilsa stepped to the left, and Carlos stepped directly in front of Captain Jose Grancini. Carlos reverted to Spanish and extended his hand in greeting. Captain Grancini took it, and Ilsa shouted,
Go!
Carlos pulled the captain hard, straight at him. Grancini lurched and tripped. Carlos fell onto his back to shield him. Ilsa stepped forward a foot and crouched. She saw movement to her right. She fired twice and saw a ghostly face lit up by the muzzle flash, contort in pain and surprise. She lunged into the open hatchway. She landed hard on her right side, feeling the money dig painfully into her. She saw movement. She fired twice more, this time into the darkness on the left, and once again she saw her victim's face light up in agony. She crawled forward as fast as possible. The tightly wrapped money made her movements awkward and slow. The ringing in her ears made her deaf, and the flash from the muzzle had half-blinded her. If there were more, or she'd only wounded these men, she'd be in trouble. She rolled onto her feet, dropped the .38 and drew her Mauser from her thigh holster. She dropped to her stomach and searched for more targets. Captain Johnson watched Ilsa and Carlos as they greeted the captain at the top of the gangway. I see the captain. Sean scanned for the two tails they'd picked up. They'd melted into the shadows near where Portman had been. What about the others? Do you see them? Where's Portman? He couldn't keep the growing concern out of his voice. Things were happening way too fast, and Ilsa was smack dab in the middle of it. Johnson shifted the binoculars and scanned the darkness. He finally said,
I can't see anything. Damn.
Sean wished he had a set of binoculars, or even better, a scoped Springfield rifle. He almost felt naked without a rifle. Neither of them wore uniforms. Portman insisted they dress as civilians to keep a low profile. Sean didn't like it, but he understood the logic. Instead of a rifle, he carried a Colt 45 caliber 1911 in a bulky holster. From this distance, he might as well have been carrying a BB gun. He watched Ilsa wave at the captain. Sean couldn't hear her, but he could tell they exchanged words as she and Carlos ascended the long gangway in single file. He felt his anxiety spike as sweat beaded on his forehead. The powerful lights on the pier lit the walkway, and Johnson observed Ilsa and Carlos easily. He sucked in a breath and stiffened. Sean asked, What is it? Something wrong? Carlos just drew his pistol. Sean strained but couldn't see such detail. Standard procedure? He asked hopefully. Johnson just shrugged and kept watching them. They're approaching the ship's captain. Sean touched the pistol hanging from his belt and leaned forward. He wanted to run out there and help. He saw a quick movement near the top, then a flash, followed an instant later by the sharp report of gunfire. He saw people on the ground and more loud cracks. Shit! Cursed Captain Johnson. Sean reacted instantly. He burst out the door and ran down the flight of stairs two at a time. He heard Captain Johnson exhorting him to stop, but he ignored him and kept running. He pulled the pistol and jacked in a round, then clicked the safety. He covered the 40 yards from the observation point of the dock in seconds, then slowed as he approached the darkness where the two tails had disappeared. He didn't hear more gunfire, but wondered if he would over the roaring of blood rushing in his ears. He glanced up at the ship. The gaping black hole looked empty, but he could see people on the ground just outside of it. He hoped it wasn't Ilsa's bleeding body. The thought almost made him bolt through the darkness, but he had to deal with the two tails first. Hopefully, Portman had done so, but he couldn't be sure, and he didn't relish being shot in the back. He glanced left, looking for Blake, but he couldn't see him either. He held the pistol with both hands and walked slowly into the darkness. He felt horribly exposed, but hoped they would focus all their attention on the ship, not their rear. Now fully in the darkness, his eyes adjusted a little, and he saw movement to the right of the guard shack. He stopped, crouched, and aimed at the spot. The last thing he wanted to do was shoot Portman, but he couldn't call out and give his position away. He heard talking, and his confusion gave way to terror when he realized the words were in German. Portman had either been killed or incapacitated. He slowly rose, keeping the pistol steady. He took a few steps toward the chatter. He saw a black outline just yards ahead. His adrenaline spiked, and he struggled to keep his breathing under control. He thought the Germans must be able to hear his thumping heartbeat. He realized in a flash that he might have to kill these men. The army had trained him to kill, but not like this. He thought about this moment many times, but nothing prepared him for the feeling of dread and terror building deep in his gut. The amorphous shape manifested into two distinct forms. Two men crouched, facing the ship, discussing their next move. He wondered where the hell Portman had gone. A few more steps and he'd be upon them. He had to decide. Could he simply shoot these men in the back? Perhaps one of them was actually Portman, or perhaps an innocent dock worker, or perhaps a night fisherman in the wrong place at the wrong time. He couldn't see well enough to be sure. He took another step and his foot wedged into something soft. He couldn't catch himself and he fell forward. He had the distinct feeling he'd tripped on a body. The noise as he hit the ground sounded like thunder in his ears. He heard someone call out in surprise, the words foreign. Both shapes turned toward him, and he saw metal glint, then an impossibly bright flash and a thunderclap of sound. An instant later, he aimed and fired as fast as he could pull the trigger. He held the .45 caliber with one hand, but adrenaline and survival instinct kept the weapon from bucking out of his hand. He burned through the 7 ACP rounds quickly. He pulled the trigger again, but nothing happened. Panic threatened to overcome him as the night lit up with more muzzle flashes. They seemed impossibly close. He scooted backward, seeking the only cover he had, the body. He felt the snap of bullets passing close, and the tremor as they thunked into the body or zinged off concrete and metal. Would a body stop a bullet? He knew the answer. No. He ejected the magazine without thinking and reached for another before he realized he didn't have another. He rolled right. More sharp cracks and bright muzzle flashes. He thought they must hit him, but he felt nothing except the hard dock as he kept rolling. Suddenly, the dock ran out, and he felt himself falling. He splashed into the warm Panamanian waters, and the harsh sound of gunfire immediately softened, replaced by rushing water. His side stung from his clumsy entrance, and he realized he'd dropped his pistol. He stayed under and stroked back toward the dock, hoping it would shield him. He couldn't see anything, but he felt comfortable in water, so he stayed deep. He and his cousins, Sean and Frank, had spent endless hours swimming down river rapids, sometimes at night. The trick wasn't to panic. You always had more air than you thought. He thumped into something with his head and he saw stars momentarily. Stunned, he reached out and felt the hard, slimy surface of a wooden pier strut. He allowed himself to rise, keeping his hands on the round wooden beam. He broke the surface, and he saw the underside of the dock only yards over his head. He gulped in air, then listened intently. No gunfire. Only the gentle lapping of the sea and the soft groans of nearby ships. Then he heard yelling. Ilsa stood at the top of the gangway, her Mauser aimed at the man she'd shot. Carlos and Captain Gronzini struggled to disentangle themselves, cursing at one another in Spanish. Ilsa said, "Are there more of them? Answer me." Gronzini finally sat up and answered, "No, just the two." Ilsa knelt and looked down the gangway. "Two more followed us. Do you see them?" Carlos answered, "No. Too dark down there. The Americans must have taken care of them." "Americans? What Americans?" asked Gronzini. One of the Nazis moaned, and Ilsa pulled his body out of the hatchway and into the light. She saw no blood, but his pale, almost gray skin and his distinct grimace told her he'd been wounded badly. "Watch him," she hissed, and Carlos nodded and adjusted his position. She disappeared into the hatchway and came out a few seconds later. "The other one's dead," she said coldly. She handed Carlos the .38. There's one ready to go. Carlos took the weapon and checked it himself. He reached into his pants pocket and pulled out more ammo. He reloaded.
I'll finish him.
Ilsa shook her head.
No, the...
A sudden popping of gunfire erupted near the guard station. She saw distinct flashes of light on the far side. She stood and ordered,
Stay with him!
She didn't wait for Carlos's reply. She sprinted down the gangway toward the gunfire. It sounded like a pitched battle. She slowed after she leaped onto the dock. She hadn't used the Mauser, so she had a full 8 rounds to work with, plus a reload. She hoped it would be enough. She glanced up where she knew Sean and the paratrooper captain kept over watch, but she couldn't see them in the darkened building. She wondered what Sean must be thinking. Hopefully he watched her now. The firing intensified on the other side of the building. She hated running headlong into a firefight, but right now it made sense while both sides were fully engaged. She could surprise the Nazis, perhaps even take them prisoner while they reloaded. She trotted forward with her pistol ready. She cut out of the light and into the darkness on the left side of the building. A railing ran along the length, keeping walkers from falling into the sea. She'd only gone a few feet when she heard a large splash. She stopped and kneeled. Then she heard German. Are you hit? And the quick, pained answer.
Yeah.
A shape darted out from the corner and leaned over the railing, aiming his pistol into the murk. He steadied his aim and cursed loudly. Ilsa took careful aim and fired 2 shots. Her target dropped like a deflating balloon. She raced to the corner and rounded it quickly, letting the pistol lead the way. She saw a dark shape near the wall of the building. He tried to raise a pistol, but his arm shook horribly and he clutched at his stomach with the other hand. She dodged quickly, then lunged forward and smacked his hand, sending the pistol flying beneath the building. She rested the barrel of her pistol on his forehead and in perfect German said,
You lose, Nazi.
He moaned and slumped, all the fight leaving him. Someone came at a dead run from behind her. She spun, aiming her pistol. She saw Captain Johnson's and Blake's worried faces in the light. They had pistols drawn and ready. She saw the squad of paratroopers advancing quickly behind them. She yelled,
Don't shoot! It's me, Ilsa! Don't shoot!
She saw Johnson and Blake slow, then Johnson sped up again. He entered the shadows and stopped near a lump. He knelt, and she heard despair in his voice.
No, damn it.
Her heart seemed to fill with ice as she envisioned him kneeling beside a body. Sean's body. The sounds of sirens filled the night, but all she could hear was her heart breaking.
Sean,
she said mournfully. Captain Johnson raised his voice. No, it's Portman. Joy, then guilt, then joy again. She couldn't keep tears from blurring her vision.
Where's Sean?
He's not here. He ran down here at the first shot. She yelled,
Sean!
Captain Johnson yelled,
Cooper!
Blake kept vigil behind them, searching for more threats. Ilsa heard a faint call from beneath the docks.
I'm here! I'm down here!
She remembered the splash and her heart filled with happiness.
Oh, thank God!
She stammered unashamedly as she went to the railing. She leaned over and saw him looking up at her with that boyish grin, and she nearly burst with joy.